as a people with one song, with one voice.
Which way Nigeria? Which way Nigeria? Which way to go?
Which way to go?
Nigeria, it's people who are here. Come on, God of a gem. Tori Kosi, Omi Roti, Amilo.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, celebrating Nigeria at 60 with historical nostalgic programs and music in the spirit of the diamond anniversary of our nation. From October till December 2020, keep on listening to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Alright, it's Soul Spirit of Nigeria Radio, giving you positive Nigerian energy, radiating positive Nigerian narratives, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. We are the authentic source of Nigerian information. And of course, it's our Democracy Day. I keep saying it's Democracy Day, but don't bite me, I know. It's our Diamond Day Nigeria broadcast. Today is the 60th Independence Anniversary of Nigeria, and our programming today is structured to celebrate Nigeria and also to appraise the nation 60 years as an independent nation. How far? How well? How bad? And of course, in the studios with me, Dr. Dele Shetelu, and we've been speaking to quite a number of people. Professor Isaac Olaore Albert earlier, we just spoke with Colonel Tony EM. And of course, right now, we have on the other side, somewhere, a Nigerian in diaspora, Dr. Gunleye Olalekan Samuel. He is the head of information technology for National Institute of Occupational Health in South Africa. And we'll be talking about Nigeria's development and ICT. All right, Dr. Ogunleye Olalekan Samuel, you're welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Thank you for having me.
All right, okay.
Good afternoon to your listeners.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I saw your handsome face on our flyer. I hope your people are waiting and listening. Sorry for getting in contact with you late. It's been from one talk to the other. You know Nigerians, we love to talk.
All right, this is
Action Time. All right, so doctor... I'm in between two doctors, really. Because I have, like I said, Dr. Dele Shetelu here. All right, doctor, tell us, just to establish what I typically would say is your Nigerianness. When did you leave Nigeria? And just a little bit of background so that... our listeners will be sure that we didn't go to import somebody.
I left Nigeria in 2006, immediately after my university education.
Okay.
I studied computer at Ladoke Akintola University of Technology. I did computer science.
Really? You must know my brother. You must know a Diron Arulogun somewhere there.
Yes, he's a prof now. We
he's
communicate every now and then.
Yeah, he's a deputy vice chancellor in some university. Yeah, he's my brother.
Yeah. So that's great. That's great.
Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
So I came to do my master's at the University of Cape Town back in 2006.
Mm.
So my initial plan was when I finish my master's, I want to come back home and become a lecturer.
Mm.
But as fate would have it and as destiny would dictate to me, before I finished my master's, I got a job. That was in 2007.
Wow.
Then, yes, I decided to stay. And I've been moving from one company to another. When I left my previous job, I went to Google. I worked for Google South Africa. And when I left Google, I worked for the City of Johannesburg. After that, I ventured into lecturing. Then I moved from lecturing again back into the corporate sector. So currently, I worked as... it's a government organization called National Institute of Occupational Health, where we deal with all the coronavirus analysis.
Mm.
So if you are looking at all the coronavirus analysis in South Africa, so that's basically some of the things that we do. So I head that unit that are actually conducting the analysis and providing ICT and IT infrastructure for that over the whole of the organization.
Oh, well, okay, that's good, interesting. Okay, now let's talk about something which I'm sure would also interest Dr. Shetelu here, who is with me. Some people say it's a brain drain, but, you know, there's a school of thought that says it's not a brain drain. Rather, it is people in diaspora coming to seek Nigerian expertise? How do you see it?
It is not really a brain drain. It is actually, it's more or less like basically what happened in the early days of our independence, like around the 60s, the 70s, where most of the professors that you see in Nigerian universities today, they, most of them didn't do their master's and PhD in Nigeria. Immediately they finished when they realized that these people are brilliant. They even went for their PhD straight without doing master's. They jumped that just because of their brilliancy. Where the challenge is basically where the government of the day, when I say the government of the day, I'm not necessarily referring to the current president, but I'm talking about the current democratic dispensation that we've been coming up with since 1999. Yeah. Where the challenge is that they do not tap into some of us that are actually doing a lot of exploitations in various fields in the diaspora. For instance, if you go to America, after Indians, Nigerians have the highest number of doctors. The same thing if you come to South Africa. Nigeria has, at least after South Africa, Nigeria is the largest doctors that we have in South Africa.
True,
The same thing in the ICT sector. When you look at the people that are heading some of those ICT in South Africa, and most of the companies in South Africa, most of them are Nigerians, or most of them are from West Africa.
Okay, so it's not really like a dream, but when the British government comes to take away, in quotes, our doctors and give them pounds, which when they convert to Naira makes a lot more sense than staying here, what do you call that?
Like I said, that is not a brain drain. That is more or less like a poaching or head hunting. So when I got my first job in the country, I was actually head hunted. The company came to UCT, University of Cape Town, and they conducted interview. I didn't even plan. I was just passing by, and the lady said, "Do you want to do an interview?" I said, "Okay, what are you interviewing for?" And then I went there, they asked me some questions, they got my number. So I think that's more or less the same model. It's a case of, let's look at it in football, let's look at football as well. So these guys, they go abroad, they go to Europe, Asia, and all those developed or semi-developed countries to play. But in the end, when the country needs people who are going to represent them, an African Cup of Nations, in the World Cup, they go and look at the people that are working in Europe, that are playing in Europe and doing all those things. But when the country needs people who can assist in medical infrastructure, in ICT development, then they overlook people in the diaspora. That is fine. It is fine to overlook people in the diaspora, but while you overlook people in the diaspora, you must also spend on the people that are at home. Without investing in the human capital, of people that are at home, you will not be able to get the best out of them.
Well, that's correct. All right, so here is the doctor who is here in Nigeria, Lagos State University in the Political Science Department, Dr. Shetelu. Do you agree with him? Oh, Jerry, my own, and I think honestly, in my personal opinion, it's not brain drain. Is seeking expertise. It's just that we don't know how to retain our experts here.
Well, it's rather contentious. And there's no unanimity, you know, I know, on the question of what constitutes brain drain. Otherwise, I'd rather describe it as brain drain. You know, in my view, it is brain drain. Similar to capital drain or capital flight that African developing countries have been through, you know, as a result of capital divestment, you know, by either two transnational companies that vacated economies for the fact that these economies are unstable with unstable exchange rates, etc., etc. But beyond that, there's a trajectory now. There's a new trajectory. Some of the scholars, development scholars, have introduced a new new dimension into the discussion on brain drain, you know, and it's called the brain gain. You know, there seems
that's
to be
word,
a shift now, a trajectory from brain drain to brain gain. And how does it work? You know, the idea is, even if Nigerian intellectuals in different parts of the world, in Europe, in the United States, in Japan, in South Africa, etc., that we could develop modalities whereby maybe they could do sabbaticals, they could do, you know, leave of absence, and they could actually teach through online in African investors. They might not be here physically, such that the knowledge, the expertise are still beneficial to African states and economies, you know, within the continent. You know, it's been discussed at the theoretical and intellectual level, but some of the investors in East Africa, and I suppose some of the investors in South Africa, are actually working concretely to implement, you know, the brain gain. I am aware that the infrastructure deficit in African investors. I'm also aware that the states in Africa, you know, the state is anti-intellectual, you know. The state is, regrettably and tragically so, is anti-intellectual.
Prof, you know. Doctor, you are a leftist, I know. All right, you see, Doctor can't talk any longer. All right, Dr. Guleya Laliko Samuel, all the way in South Africa. Let's talk a little bit about ICT. You talked about coronavirus and the things that you do at the National Institute of Occupational Health in South Africa. Now, if I look at the NCDC website here in Nigeria, samples tested so far 509,555. Do you think we're testing enough?
No, to be honest, they haven't tested enough. Let's be honest with ourselves. But you see, each country has its own policy based on what they believe, and each country also has their own sovereignty. Because the fact that they have not tested, they might be, which I believe, not necessarily they might be, looking at the analysis that we have done here so far, and looking at comparing South Africa and Nigeria together, the reason why the government may not test, there might be some other factors that are attached to it. For instance, it's what it is. Nigerians, not many Nigerians go on holiday, if you understand what I mean.
I do.
Not many Nigerians go on tourism like South Africans would do. So in terms of testing, they've not tested enough, but I wouldn't fault them for that. I wouldn't blame them for that. There might be a lot of factors that are ascertained to it. Testing is not cheap. I can tell you that.
I know.
It involves a lot of money.
Even in Nigeria, my friend that came in from England had to test with 56,000 naira or something like that. All right. Okay, so let's go now further into the ICT area, which is... Okay, go ahead.
No, I wanted to say that's even cheaper. If you compare how much, unless you tested in a government facility, which is free, if you test in a private facility, if you compare the money to Naira, that's about 27,000 Naira per test. And if you don't have a medical aid, you have to pay that money from your pocket.
Okay, so let's look at ICT and the Nigerian nation. 60 years down the road, 60 years down the line, how do you think, in your opinion, in your estimation, are we faring well?
So in terms of ICT in Nigeria, I can authoritatively tell you that we have not been doing very well in every sector. The only sector, and let's be fair to them, even though they have not tried enough, but out of 100%, I'll probably give them between 85 to 90, which is actually a very good mark. So the only sector who has actually made a lot of inroads, which I think government should be using their model in Nigeria, is actually the banking sector.
I was going to say so.
It's the banking sector. They've actually, most of the things that Nigerian banks have done, most African banks, even in the world, most banks in the world will not even do it. For instance, you can transfer money. Nigeria is basically one of the only countries in Africa where you can transfer money and the receiver receives the money instantly. That's a very huge innovation and technological advancement. I can tell you, go to America, I can tell you authoritatively, if you transfer money for interbank transfer, you won't get it on the same day. It will take up to 48 hours before you get the money.
Wow. All right, so that means we're not doing too badly, at least in that sector.
I would say public sectors in Nigeria are doing very well. But when it comes to private sector, rather, not public sector. Private sectors in Nigeria are doing very well. But when it comes to public sector, I'm going to give them about 15 out of 100.
Wow, that's not a pass mark.
Yes, the truth of the matter is, it's not a pass mark, but that it is what it is. We cannot, in terms of technology or ICT adoption, we cannot compare South Africa with Kenya, Egypt. Nigeria, we cannot compare Nigeria with South Africa, Kenya, and Egypt. In the whole of Africa, not even Ghana. So in the whole of Africa, Kenya is actually leading the whole of Africa when it comes to technology adoption. So for instance, you can buy anything in any shop with your credit, with your airtime, what we used to call credit in Nigeria, from your phone. So you can buy anything from any shop with your airtime. Everybody has a unique ID. That's amazing. That's a lot of things. I mean, it's amazing stuff to do. So in South Africa, you don't have to go and apply for your primary one school. You do everything online. Even if you don't have internet connectivity, you can do USSD. So those are some of the things that I think the government should begin to embrace in Nigeria, especially looking at the numbers, because the government has the numbers in their head. If you look in any country, no government jokes with the data of its citizen. Data is gold. Data is the new oil. Only Nigerian government jokes with the data of its citizen. As a result, they handed over our precious data. They gave it to the BVN. And do you know how much these people make? Do you know how much that BVN company makes on our data? You force me to collect my data, and you are making money on my data, and you are not giving me the money. That's why you see the private sector, some of those banks, declaring billions of naira as profit every year. But the government keeps on saying they don't have money. Let me give you an example. In South Africa, there's what we call Department of Home Affairs. Home Affairs deals with the data of every citizen in Nigeria. We have the same ministry in Nigeria. In South Africa, it's called Department of Home Affairs, like what they have in America called Homeland Security. Yes. In Nigeria, it is our department. It is our Ministry of Internal Affairs.
Yes.
The Ministry of Internal Affairs in Nigeria, they cannot authoritatively say, this is the number of male that we have in this country today. This is the number of female that we have in this country today. This is the number of unemployed youth that we have in this country today. When I see National Bureau of Statistics dishing out data about unemployment, the next question that comes to my mind is, where did you get the data from? Do you know how many people that graduated in this country in a year? Do you know how many people that get employed by each of those private sectors and the public sector in this year? So most of those things, they just have to report to the citizen and behave like they are working. But definitely, when you ask them, they don't even know how to do data analysis. I can tell you the truth. And I've met with some of them, and I've told them that this is the reality on ground. Like my learned colleague said, the doctor that spoke earlier, let's be honest with ourselves. When it comes to ICT, when it comes to implementation, we have a lot of skills in Nigeria. Oh my goodness. There are too many. I can tell you. But as he said, we have an economy, we have government policy that is anti-innovation, that is anti-development. Let me say that. Even this current government, some of the policies that they have is anti-development. Because let me tell you one thing, the banks in Nigeria,
yes,
they don't develop their core banking platform in Nigeria. They develop it in either India either China, either South Korea, those three countries. And I can authoritatively tell you that they, when those infrastructure, those banking platform has a problem, they will spend millions of dollars, or millions of naira rather, they will spend millions of nairas to fly the experts from India or China or South Korea to Nigeria. Mm. They will lodge them in five-star hotel. Mm. They will give them huge per day allowance just to assist them. And we have a lot of software developers, a lot of ICT engineers, a lot of network infrastructure engineers who are jobless, and they are brilliant. And the government is sitting down there in Abuja making policies, and they cannot make a policy that will affect the bank to say, when it comes to implementation of your core banking platform, it must be developed within inside the country. That is what South Africa has done. If you do that, there's no way there will not be job, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
Is all the core banking platforms that are being used in South Africa, they are developed in-house in South Africa. So somebody knows that if I study computer science and I go and I finished university, I'll get a job. If not as an internship, I'll get a job as a part-timer or as a freelancer. So those are some of the things that we are lacking in Nigeria. The truth of the matter is we have the resources, but management of that resources is zero. And those are some of the things that you also find out that all of these things cannot work in isolation. All of them cannot work in isolation. The Ministry of Labor cannot work in isolation without the involvement of the Ministry of Science and Technology. Mm. The Ministry of Science and Technology cannot work in isolation without the involvement of the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Mm. So they have what you call NIMC, NIMC. The same NIMC, when you are requesting for your data to make a modification on the data, they will not be able to give you the data. You apply, and it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things that are attached to it. It's just a lot of things. Ooh. But the ball stops at the doorstep of the government. And let me be honest with you. The truth of the matter is, you cannot. One of the challenges that I find that we, or one of the mistakes that I find that people make in Nigeria, is the fact that people think the federal government is actually the one that will do everything. So they do not, as Nigerians, in terms of everything that we need, we do not really understand that the government that can transform us and give us what we want really quickly, they are actually the government that are closer to us, the state government, the local government, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
The city of Johannesburg in South Africa, for instance, is a local government. Johannesburg only has 9 million residents as a local government. The budget of the city of Johannesburg is 25% of the total budget of Nigeria. Mm. Mm. If you look at what I'm saying. And the budget, that budget is about three countries that surround South Africa: Swaziland, Botswana, and Malawi. So all those things in that budget, they budget ICT infrastructure, job creation, economic development. But in Nigeria today, if you look for any local government, when you get to the local government secretariat where the government of that local government should see, you will not even see anybody there. It's more or less like a desert.
They are there. They might not be doing anything much.
Exactly. That's actually what I mean. I'm just trying to manage my words. So I'm just trying to manage what I say. But the truth of the matter is that we put more pressure on the federal government, thinking that the federal government is the one that will do everything. As a result, we take our eyes off the state government and the local government. And those are actually the people that can actually transform us in terms of everything that we need.
Okay. All right, I hear you loud and clear. And in terms of ability to comprehend some of the things that you're talking about, I've been there. When I was in the Ministry of Information, Culture and Tourism in Oyo State, I told them I didn't need a secretary. They didn't understand why. I didn't need the people who used to sit right there because I was used to typing my things myself and print on my system. But they found it a bit, you know, odd. And for my 3 years on that seat, I never used a secretary. I had my laptop, I had my, you know, who is going to be typing for me? And of course, many other departments of government, you just see all kinds of things, no internet, no, you know what I mean? I mean, so there's still a whole lot that we need to do 60 years after.
Oh.
And I'm sure that someday we'll get it right. All right. Okay. So let Dr. Yetolu, you know, weigh in on some of the things that you've raised. Keep on listening.
Yes, Doc, I appreciate your interventions. I appreciate your passion. You know, I wish you were in Nigeria to assist Nigeria's development trajectory. But nonetheless, we expect that somewhere along the line, you still think about Nigeria, you probably consider returning to Nigeria. I'd like to raise three issues. You know, one, first is on the, about the public sector. You made the point about the growth in the private sector and the setbacks in the public sector. Yeah, I quite agree. You know, ironically, the public sector ought to be developed. The public sector ought to drive development in the private sector. I'm aware, for instance, that you know, that the public sector in Japan, for instance, which is a developmental state, is you know, arguably, you know, the most developed sector, you know, in Japan. In fact, I'm aware that you know, most of the people in Japan would rather work in the public sector. And why would they prefer the public sector? The public sector in the Asian countries, particularly the Asian tigers, the Southeast Asian tigers, the public sector is highly developed. It, you know, the public sector workers are highly challenged. The public sector worker in the Asian tigers are highly motivated. They're highly inspired. You know, and the public sector is based on knowledge, you know, including the information technology. So the public sector really should be the rubric of development. It should be the linchpin of development. In other words, development initiatives should emanate from the public sector, and it should define the agenda for development. But the tragedy, you know, the developmental crisis in several states in Africa is such that the public sector is underdeveloped, backward, unintellectual. So it lacks the capacity to lead development and to define the context of development. You know, the second issue I need to talk about is the character of development. You mentioned a point which I find, which I consider quite interesting and salient. About the platforms, the banking platforms in South Africa that are largely internal, you know, and that presupposes that South Africa, to a large extent, is defining a developmental agenda that is endogenous, you know. But on the contrary, developmental initiative in Nigeria is exogenous.
Mm.
The Bretton Woods institutions, the IMF, the World Bank, etc., are defining, you know, defines the development initiatives in Nigeria. They develop the blueprints, and the blueprints are not necessarily Africa's historic specific. And what we find in the long run is that, you know, the Bretton Woods institutions and the development partners import policies and strategies that reinforces Africa and Nigeria's underdevelopment rather than foster, you know, autonomous development. You know, the third point I'd like to raise is about the role of the state. And by state, I do not necessarily mean the state at the subnational level. I mean the state at the global level, you know. You know what? It's obvious that the state, you know, has a role to play in the developmental process, you know. I recall that, you know, that the states in Europe, the states in America actually intervened in development. The states should define the agenda for development. The state should mediate the market. It should actually supervise the market. But on the contrary, you know, in Africa, particularly in Nigeria, the state has abandoned its superintendent role. The state has abandoned its role as a principal fulcrum, you know, the agent of development. It has abandoned the role to the market. And what we found is a situation where the state that ought to be the linchpin of development, you know, is laid back, undecided, and in some instances has disappeared. So we have a disappearing state in Nigeria, you know, a disappearing state, a collapsing state, a failing state, you know, that characterized by unintellectual governing class. You know, we still appreciate that the state, for a political economy to grow and develop, the state should be the linchpin, you know, they should be the fulcrum of development. But regrettably, the state in Africa, including the state in Nigeria, is a backward state, an unintellectual state, a predatory state that underdevelops Nigeria rather than develop it. So we need to rethink the state, and we need to recreate the state in Nigeria. Otherwise, I'm afraid Nigeria might remain perpetually underdeveloped and backward.
All right, Doctor, right back to you in South Africa. So for your final words, put it together, especially in the context of some of the things that Dr. Shetelu has, you know, uttered in the studio today.
I think I fully agree with everything that Doctor has said.
Really?
I cannot really agree with more or less.
This is a case of two doctors.
To be honest. yeah, so he has actually spoken well, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Look, let me just corroborate some of the things that he said regarding the public sector in Japan. Mm. Most of the technology infrastructure that we are enjoying in the world today, they are made by public sector in the United States. Mm. The internet is as a result of the research that came from the Department of Defense, which is run by the government. Mm. What we used to know, what we call encryption today, that we used to do all the logins that we are doing today, is as a result of the research that came from FBI in America.
Wow.
So the internet was, they created the internet during the Vietnam War, the Department of Defense, to say we need something that we can use to communicate with ourselves during this war. That was what brought about internet. So if you look at the public sector in America, public sector, they are kind of innovative. Innovation drives everything that they do. Mm. Not only in America. If you go to Kenya, for instance, you find out that most of the things that are coming out of the private sector, the government are quick to embrace it instead of dissociate themselves from it. But let me tell you the truth. When you get to public sector in Nigeria, it's more or less like that is basically a security that is guaranteed for you to keep your job. Most of the people that are there, they don't really know what they are there for, if you understand what I'm saying. Mm. So imagine a public sector where there's no electricity and they will be asking the public to pay to buy fuel into the generator in order to service in order to receive things that you are going to still pay for.
Mm.
So we have a lot of anomalies. And the truth of the matter is until the government of the day, and let me challenge the current government, until the government of the day, for instance, you see the Ministry of Science and Technology. What have they done in terms of science and technology innovation? What is NITDAT doing? What is NITDAT doing? National Information Technology Development Agency. What are they doing? We have a lot of agencies that are doing nothing in terms of information. And we have a lot of people. You have a professor who calls him or herself the director of NITDA. But what development has NITDA brought to the country as a whole? So these are some of the things. And again, the government cannot do it as a whole. I want to challenge my learned colleague, the doctor there, because he's a member of University of Lagos. They need to start coming up with research that can help the government, because they are product of the government. They are being paid by the government. But what are they themselves doing to assist the government in terms of the development? Is it only about lecturing, or where is the place of research in our Nigerian institution? If you understand what I'm saying,
yeah.
I can tell you in Nigeria today, And I understand the frustration that they might be facing, that the government is not pumping enough money. Those are some of the things that I think ASUU should be fighting for. When you get research grants, automatically you will get something for yourself. It's not all about salaries alone, but there must be a way. So this thing is, the government cannot work in isolation as well, but the government must make sure that they enable the environment. And that's basically the word I'm parting with. They must make sure that they enable the environment that will allow the intellectuals in Nigeria to thrive. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Nice way. Good point. And to end it, Dr. Oguleye Oladiko Samuel, Head of Information Technology for National Institute of Occupational Health, South Africa. Thank you very much for being a part of today's broadcast on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Thank you very much. We hope some other time you'll give us the opportunity to talk to you on some other issues. Thank you for being a part of the show today. Thank you very much. All right, Doctor, another dimension. You know, we've looked at ICT. Of course, still not unconnected with some of the issues that we've been discussing about earlier today. And of course, we'll take one more Nigerian from, I think it's from Chicago. Let's hear what, you know, the Nigerians in diaspora think about their country. We just got one from Africa, so let's go to the US now. Maybe before we go, we'll also go to the UK. Somebody is standing by to talk to us. And of course, you know, this is a station that brings Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, giving positive Nigerian energy.
We stand as a people with one song, with one voice.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, celebrating Nigeria at 60 with historical nostalgic programs and music in the spirit of the diamond anniversary of our nation. From October till December 2020, keep on listening to Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Yeah.